Off Me Block, Book 3, Done and Dusted, Chapter 10, A White Sports Coat. True to his word, there was neither sight nor sound of Tommy the following day, busy as he was getting ready for the big occasion, his second marriage. Beautiful and scenic as it is, there's not very much to do in Rosslare Strand. Myself and my wife walked the beach. Then we had lunch in a small restaurant before heading back to the hotel in the late afternoon to have a drink or two in the lounge before getting an early night. What greeted us in there was nothing short of a Tommy Costello convention. All of his brothers, with the exception of Patsy, of course, were there with their wives, partners and children in tow, and each and every one of them was the absolute carvings of Tommy himself, right down to the moustaches and the coarse language. Try as we might, there was no escaping them once I'd introduced myself as a friend of Tommy's. We spent the evening with them, the pints flowing, the banter flying back and forth, and a sing-song like I'd never seen before dragging out till the early hours. Tommy made a brief appearance at about 10 o'clock, but he didn't stay for long, and he didn't have a drink. He'd only come down to the lobby to meet Safina and Gareth when they arrived, and he was only too happy to introduce me to them. Safina, it must be said, is an absolute stunner of a young woman. She's quite tall. Taller than Tommy, and she has a mass of chestnut-brown hair that falls in gorgeous curls about her tanned face, a face which is lit up by beautiful brown eyes. Gareth is the image of his father, although his hair is a shade lighter than Tommy's, and without ever having met her, it is easy to see that there's more than a little of his mother's looks across his eyes. His partner, Neil, is a gentleman and could not have been nicer to both myself and my wife. And then there's St. John. The only way that I can correctly describe him is to slip into Tommy's vernacular and say that he really is nothing short of a lanky streak of a prick. "Listen, pal," says Tommy, "I'd better be getting to me scratcher. Will you be all right here with this shower of gobshites?" "I'll be grand," I tell him. "Good stuff. Listen, meself and them lot will be here from about 1 o'clock tomorrow. You know, to have a couple, just a couple, mind you, before it all gets going. If you fancy an early jar or two, sure you're more than welcome to join us if you like. I'll be there with bells on," I tell him. "Good stuff. I'll see you then, so." About an hour after Tommy left us, Safina excuses herself from our party, telling us that she's anxious to get the two children down for the night. They are to be flower girl and page boy for the next day's ceremony, and she wants them on best behaviour. Given that they're only 15 months old, I think they'll be anything but. The night is one of the craziest I've ever spent in a residence bar. Tommy's brothers are all in fine fettle and just as mad as the man himself. Before I finally head to my bed in the small hours, I've seen them play a variety of crazy drinking games, including tumbling onto a chair from behind without touching the ground once, jumping over a brush handle while holding it with two hands. Another feat performed with a perfect dexterity which no drunk should ever be able to aspire to was to hold a plate flat on the palm of the hand with a pint full of stout placed on top of it. The trick with this was to start off with the two held out flat in front of you. Then you had to twist your wrist and bring the plate in under your arm, and then, with your arm twisted backwards, to bring the plate and the pint up over your head and back to the starting position. Needless to say, I spilled 3 pints in my endeavours, while each and every one of Tommy's brothers had the knack of it down to a fine art. There were stories told, more than I'd ever heard from Tommy, and judging by what his brothers told me, it would seem he'd been holding out on me, quite a lot in fact. I thought I'd heard it all from the man himself. But if the yarns which were traded that night by the lads about their brother were anything to be believed, it would seem that I'd only seen the tip of the iceberg. There was so much more to Tommy Costello than I could have imagined. There was now even more things that I wanted to ask him about. After a couple of hours of spirited singing, everything from ballads to old standards, myself and my wife made our excuses and went back to our room, the both of us absolutely exhausted from the session. It's early afternoon on what is a glorious summer's day. I find Tommy and his brothers in the bar as arranged. He's dressed in a white tuxedo while his brothers are wearing grey morning suits. "Jesus, there you are, man. What do you think of the tin of fruit?" says Tommy as I join him. "Fucking well feel like I'm back doing me Joe Dolan gigs out in Cyprus." "You look great, Tommy. Honestly, you do." "I don't know about that, pal. Herself picked it out. I wanted a navy suit, something simple like that. But as we're tying the knot out in the gardens, herself says I'll stay nice and cool in this. And whatever herself wants, herself gets. Those poor fuckers will be melting though, God help them." He nods in the direction of his brothers, all of them now gathered around the one table and doing shots. "Here, lads, for Jesus' sake, will yous lay off it? Yous'll be buckled before yous even get me to the altar, for fuck's sake." In unison,
they give their brother the finger and continue drinking.
Despite the garishness of his white tuxedo, Tommy looks great. He's beaming from ear to ear as he speaks, and there is a light in his eyes which I've never seen before. He is the epitome of happiness, and his joy is ridiculously contagious. I could never fully convey to you just how good it felt to be standing there with himself and his brothers as they toasted his future. After everything that he's been through, after all that he has told me about his life to date, it really is an amazing thing to be with him on the morning that he makes a new and fresh start in life. I have two drinks with him, but he's only sipping his, saying that he wants to be as sober as a judge so that he can savour every single moment of the day. "Do we have time for a quick blast?" he asks me after a little while. "You've got about 10 minutes or so," I reply. "Grand, so come on. Do you still have me fags from the other night?" "I do." "Coola boola. Come on, we'll go round the side." Just as we are about to walk away from the bar, Tommy's phone rings. "Give us a minute, pal, will you?" He wasn't exaggerating when he told me his new phone was like a fridge door. It's ridiculously oversized and it covers half of his face as he talks. "See what I mean?" he says once he's finished the call. "Fucking phone's a load of shite, so it is. Oh, I still can't get the hang of it, for Jesus' sake. Anyways, forget about it. Come on, we'll get that blast before everything gets going, okay?" "Oh, here. I nearly forgot. This is for you." He hands me a small parcel wrapped in brown paper. "What's this?" I ask him. "You're the one getting married. I'm supposed to be handing you a present." "First of all, it's not a present. I want it back." "What is it?" I ask as I set about opening the package. "No, not now," says Tommy as he stays my hand. "You can open it tomorrow or the next day, all right? Remember when I told you I found something in the attic when we were clearing out my gaff after the infinite? Well, you know. Well, that's it, pal." He taps the parcel with his finger. "I thought you might get a buzz out of it. I want it back though, all right, in a few weeks, like. Now come on, are we getting that blast or not?" On our way around to the side of the hotel, Tommy's phone never stopped. Congratulatory text messages and phone calls are flooding in and he struggles to keep up with them. "This fucking phone will be the death of me, do you know that? It hasn't fucking stopped since yesterday. Then again, it's nice that so many people care, I suppose, isn't it? So long as it doesn't go off halfway through the ceremony." "Turn it off," I tell him. "Or if you want me to, I can hold on to it until you're done." "Nah, thanks all the same, man. But I'll have to hold on to it. Believe it or not, Gillian wants to take a selfie as we walk down the aisle so that she can put it up on Insta something. A fucking selfie. Can you believe that? Here, what time is it?" "It's 1:55. "Ah, here, for fuck's sake," he says, flicking a cigarette to the ground. "She'll be bleeding well there before me." We walked around to the gardens at the rear of the hotel to where the ceremony is to take place. The hotel backs onto the beach and the gardens, an undulating sea of green grass, cherry trees and flowers, runs right up to the sand dunes. There's a small dais beneath the gazebo right on the edge of the sand where Tommy and Gillian will exchange their vows. Rows of white lawn chairs are laid out beneath the trees and a red carpet runs up the centre of these right up to the dais. The trees are strung with white ribbons and paper lanterns, and as their guests take their seats, a string quartet plays Pachelbel's Canon. "What do you think?"
Tommy asks me.
"Fucking fancy or what?"
"I didn't know you had it in you," I tell him.
"I don't. This is all Gillian's work. Fucking deadly or what?"
"It looks great, Tommy. Fair play to Gillian."
"Right, I'd better get up there."
"Yeah, you'd better," I tell him. "The best of luck, Tommy, and congratulate."
"Ah, of course the loving fuck on it."
"What's wrong?" I ask him.
"This fucking tabletop of a phone won't bleeding well fit into me pocket."
He's struggling to squeeze the phone into his pants pocket, but it's a case of a round hole and a square peg.
"I'll be tucking it into me belt at this stage, for fuck's sake."
"Is there a pocket in your jacket?" I ask him.
"Good thinking, Batman."
He slips the phone into the inside pocket of his jacket.
"Fucking well made for it, so it is. Fits like a glove. Right, I'd better get up there."
15 minutes later, the quartet strike up a sedate rendition of Don't Go Breaking My Heart as the bridal party make their way up to the dais. Tommy's grandchildren lead the way, scattering peach-coloured rose petals as they go under the watchful eye of Safina, who, as bridesmaid, follows behind them, followed by Joyce, who was our mother's chief bridesmaid. Tommy's face lights up as Gillian emerges from beneath the trees at the rear of the garden. She's wearing a simple ivory dress, and despite her advancing years, I don't think I've ever seen such a radiant and beautiful bride. Her face beams as she makes her way up the aisle to where her childhood sweetheart waits for her. After a somewhat uncomfortably long kiss, the happy couple turn to the registrar and the ceremony begins. It was quite an emotional affair, and I'm almost certain that as Tommy read his vows, there was a crack in his voice and his eyes were brimming with tears. From Tommy's side of the aisle, there is a collective sigh,
redolent with happiness as family and friends, party to the long and turbulent road he had taken to finally get there, are swept up in the occasion. There was not one single begrudger present. Each and every soul there that lovely summer's afternoon was honestly and sincerely happy that Tommy had at long last found the happiness and contentment that had so cruelly eluded him for so many years. As the registrar announced the new Mr. and Mrs. Costello to the guests, the quartet struck up a rousing version of Dean Martin's Everybody Loves Somebody, and each and every person present stood to applaud the newlyweds. Tommy stood on the dais, his arm wrapped tightly around Gillian's waist. He was beaming from ear to ear with a smile that was nothing but infectious. As we cheered and clapped, he just stood there looking down at us, soaking up the atmosphere, taking in the fact that all present were genuinely happy for him, his face a picture of delight. Like a flickering frame in an old movie, his expression changed from one of happiness to one of puzzlement, and then finally to one of panic and fear. Caught up in the euphoria of the moment, few, if any, noticed Tommy release his hold on Gillian and step forward. The assembled guests continued their applause for the newlyweds, and the quartet played on as Tommy stepped down from the dais, his hands held out before him, his head shaking from side to side. The applause, the laughter, the music, all of it was cut short by a single short, sharp sound, the cocking of a shotgun. All heads turned towards the hotel to where an elderly man, his eyes red with anger, his face purple with rage, was standing, holding a double-barrel shotgun which was aimed squarely at Tommy. "Costello, you little prick," he roared as he walked forward. Tommy froze mid-pace. It was Safina who was the first to react to the situation. She ran down from the dais and past her dad, stopping at the top of the aisle. "Jesus Christ, Grandad, what are you doing? Have you completely lost your senses?" "Get out of the way, Safina," said her grandfather, his words slurred by the alcohol, which had no doubt led to this insane course of action. "He's not doing it this time. He's not going to ruin her life the way he did my Dimphinus." "Grandad, you're drunk. Come on," said Safina. "Did you think I wouldn't find out, Costello?" he said, looking past his granddaughter to where Tommy stood, frozen to the spot. "Thought you were sorted, didn't you? Had the kids sworn to secrecy, huh? Say nothing to your granddad, is that it? Then you come all the way down here to try and keep anyone from knowing about it. Didn't want me here on your big day, did you not? But here I am, and there you are, prancing around in your white suit like the Lord of the Manor, while my young one is lying in a box up there in Shankill. But you forgot about this, didn't you?" He pulled a copy of the Dublin Metro from his back pocket and threw it on the ground. "Leave it to you to announce it in the papers, looking for the attention as usual." "Grandad, please," said Safina. "You're not thinking straight. That's the drink talking. Will you put the gun down for God's sake?" "Get out of me way, Safina," he roared, "or I swear to you, I'll put you out of me way." That threat was enough to shake Tommy from his paralysis. He walked to where Safina was standing. "It's all right, pet," he said as he pushed her gently aside. "Go on and sit down. He's not going to do anything stupid. Are you, Jer? You ruined my Dimphina's life, so you did. Because of you and your ways, she's..." Tommy took a step forward. "You know that's not true, Jer. Dimphina was..." "My baby drank herself to death because..." "Yeah, exactly," said Tommy. "It had nothing to do with me. She did it to herself." "It had everything to do with you," screamed Jer, as he tightened his grip on the gun and lowered his eye to the sight. "Marrying you destroyed her. If you'd never come along, she'd have..." "Are you jays as well listening to yourself, Jer? For fuck's sake, it was you. You and that poxy shotgun that forced me up the aisle to her. If you'd have just left well enough alone, we'd have headed off to London and things would have been..." "Would have been what? Different? I suppose if you'd gone over there, that would have made you a better father, would it? You would have been a better husband too, no doubt. Is that what you're saying to me, Costello? That living in London would have made you a model of a man, would it? If you had gone to London, I suppose you'd have never fucked off to the World Cup and then wore the face off some queer one on national telly. Am I right in saying that? That dragging those kids around from club to club while you played your shitty music would have..." "It would have been different," Tommy said in defiance. "Right, I'm no angel, far bleeding from it. But this was all your fault to begin with. If you hadn't been such a bleeding heart Catholic, wrapped up in your hypocrisy and too ashamed to face the fact that there'd be a child born out of wedlock, things would have been different and Dimphina would be alive and well today. All of that was nothing to do with me. It never was. This is all on you, Jer. It's all on you. Don't even try to pawn it off on me." Tommy turned his back on his former father-in-law and walked towards Gillian, who was still standing on the dais, transfixed with shock.
Take one more step, Costello. I fucking well dare you. Tommy turned to face him. What are you going to do? Shoot me? Here, in front of all these people? Go on and fuck off home, Jerry, will you? Go on and sober up.
I'll fucking well do it. You know I will. He was screaming now, the gun waving wildly in the air as he took a few steps forward. Tommy smiled, a slight grin. The grin of a man who knows that he's just gotten the upper hand in a tense situation. He shook his head from side to side.
Jer, he said as he took a step closer. This is the third time that you've held that gun on me. The third time. Now, you might have scared me back then, all those years ago, when I was nothing more than a chiseler. But not now. Not anymore. I'm not some frightened young lad terrified of the old lad whose daughter I've gotten pregnant, right? Now go on home. Go home and sleep it off. We both know that you're not going to pull that trigger. Just turn around, get into your car and go home. We can forget this ever happened.
Jer lowered the gun momentarily, before raising it again in an instant.
Meself and Dinfna made our peace before she passed. Did you know that? We squared everything up. Tell him, Garrett.
It's true, Granda, said Garrett, stepping into the aisle. I was there. I heard it. Ma just wanted to forgive and forget.
Jer, Tommy said quietly as he stepped closer to him. Put the gun down, pal. Go home. If not for nothing but for what it's Dinfna would be telling you now if she was here.
Jer lowered the gun down to his side and let out a sigh of anguish as tears began to roll down his cheeks.
That's it. Good man, said Tommy.
Never one to leave well enough alone, a trait which had caused him all sorts of grief during his life. Tommy stepped closer to his former father-in-law.
Sure you never had it in you in the first fucking place now, did you?
A heartbeat. A single heartbeat and it was done. Before Tommy could utter another word, he was stumbling backwards to the ground. The shot was nothing more than a loud pop. A plume of blue smoke rose into the air as Tommy clutched at his chest. While panicked guests scattered in all directions, a few had the presence of mind to wrestle the gun from Jer and pin him to the ground. As he collapsed to the ground himself, Tommy's family swarmed around him. He lay flat on his back, his white suit an island in a sea of green. His jacket was scorched and shredded across the chest from where dozens of balls of shot had hit him. Safina was first to him. She cradled his head in her right arm as she fanned air to him with her left hand. Gillian dropped to her knees beside him, all thoughts of protecting her dress from staining far from her mind.
Da, Da, Jesus, Da, are you all right? Answer me.
Safina was hysterical. A small amount of blood began to seep through his jacket on the right-hand side. Not much, but more than enough to show that it was a serious situation. The spray of shot fanned out from his right side, the wide end of the wedge over his heart, where, as of yet, there was no sign of blood. As she wrung his hands in hers, Gillian pointed this out to Safina, in as much an attempt to convince herself that he was going to be all right, let alone convince Safina. After what seemed an eternity, Tommy slowly opened his eyes and drew a breath. From the whistling, rattling sound, it was immediately apparent that he had sustained, at the very least, a punctured lung.
Did that prick just fucking shoot me?
He asked, his voice weak and raspy.
You're going to be all right, Dad. Everything's going to be grand.
Safina spoke to him quietly before turning to the panicked crowd and screaming for someone to call an ambulance. Tommy tried to sit up, but Gillian pushed him back to the ground.
Don't try to move, pet. The ambulance will be here in a minute. Just try to stay still. Seriously, Tommy said, incredulous. Did that chicken-chested runt just fucking well shoot me? The prick!
Shh, said Safina. Don't be talking. Just rest here. You'll be in the hospital in no time. They'll get you sorted.
Is it bad?
Tommy asked as he put his hand to his jacket. There was blood on his fingertips from his wounds, and he regarded it curiously as his eyes went from face to face of the people gathered around him.
It's hard to breathe. It feels like I'm leaking or something.
Your lung is probably punctured, Da, said Gareth. Just try to stay still. Try to relax. Fucking easy for you to...
Tommy stopped mid-sentence and clawed at his chest on the left side.
What's wrong, Da? What's wrong?
Safina was reaching new heights of hysteria. Tommy just smiled. He reached into his inside pocket and pulled out his smartphone.
And I thought it would be the death of me,
he said as he held the phone up in front of his face. It was clear to see that the phone had taken the brunt of the blast. There were 8 shot marks across the screen. Safina wasn't looking at the phone. She stared past it, down at her father, her eyes widening. Tommy was smiling. As he looked at his phone, he turned it over in his hands. As he did,
it immediately became apparent that the shot had passed right through it and into him. That's when I followed Safina's gaze down to see the left side of Tommy's jacket turn from pure white to a deep crimson in less than a heartbeat. It was over in an instant. The colour bled from his cheeks, his breathing was laboured, and there was a thousand-yard stare in his eyes. He looked past us to something unseen. "The bollocks has fucking well killed me, the prick." And then finally, as he drew his last breath, laboured and rattled, he said, "Dimfna." It was over. Mayhem ensued.
Tommy Costello was buried the following Wednesday morning, on what should have been the first day of his and Gillian's honeymoon. At Safina's insistence, and with no protest from Gillian, he was laid to rest in Shangana Cemetery alongside Dimfna. As you might imagine, it was a very somber affair. His brothers carried his coffin from the cemetery gates to the grave, led by a lone piper playing a haunting rendition of One Alone. For a man who had been of the opinion that he had little or no friends, the turnout that morning was testament to the incredible effect which Tommy had on everyone he met. Janine was there, and I was surprised to see that, notwithstanding the manner in which things had ended between them, she was inconsolable as she watched his coffin being lowered into the ground. Despite her grief, she even had the good grace to offer her condolences to Gillian before wrapping her arms around Safina and Gareth, hugging them to within an inch of their lives. As he said a few words over the grave, the priest spoke of Tommy's kindness, his good humour, and the fact that he'd been a deeply spiritual man. I had to stifle my laughter when I heard Tommy's voice in my head saying, "Why wasn't me, bollocks?" While each of his family approached the grave to throw a rose down onto his coffin, his sister Imelda sang "How Great Thou Art," which up until that morning, I had never known was his favourite song. And then it was over, done and dusted. The crowd dispersed one by one until there was only Gillian, Safina and Gareth left by his grave. I watched them from a short distance, desperately wanting to join them in a final goodbye, but it was not my place. They were his family, his wife, his children, and I had no right to presume that I should be standing there beside them. Who was I to Tommy but a random person he had once befriended? A stranger who had once asked him, "What's the crack?" as I took a seat beside him on a flight to Cyprus. I turned and walked away. I had no business to keep me there. By all accounts, Tommy's kids remained on good terms with Gillian for several months after the funeral. However, the relationship soured when Gillian, claiming that as Tommy's widow she was entitled to his full estate, launched a bid to have the deeds of the house transferred into her name. Tommy's kids have challenged this, citing that as the necessary civil papers were never actually signed on the wedding day, Gillian never legally became Tommy's wife. It's expected that the dispute will drag on for many months, if not years. On foot of a civil judgment, Gillian can remain in the residence until the matter is resolved. Dimfna's father was charged with the shooting and is currently in Mountjoy Prison awaiting trial. His defence team have managed to have the murder charge reduced to the lesser charge of manslaughter, claiming diminished responsibility, owing to the amount of alcohol and antidepressants he had consumed that day. It is highly unlikely that he will serve anything near a significant amount of time for Tommy's murder, as he has recently been diagnosed with bowel cancer, and the prognosis is far from favourable. Both Safina and Gareth have severed all ties with him, and they are among the prosecution's chief witnesses in the upcoming trial. On Christmas Eve 2014, 4 months after Tommy's death, I finally brought myself to open the parcel which he had given to me the day he died. Inside the brown paper wrapping was a notebook, on the cover of which was written, "My Journey to Confirmation" by Thomas Costello, 6th class. The first entry reads, "Dear Nuala, me dad's in hospital and the flats have no power. The stupid bollocks nearly killed himself when he tried to wire in new sconces in the sitting room. Ma says he's a right gobshite altogether. I went swimming today with the school and I got to see Sharon Lyons in her bra. She's only a bleeding ride, so she is." I sat up into the early hours of the morning reading his diary. Every single entry had me in fits of laughter. By the time I had finished going through it, I had tears in my eyes from laughing so hard. Even at the tender age of 12, Tommy had a knack for telling a tale, the language as coarse and colourful as it would be in later life. My tears were tinged with a sadness too, a sadness evoked by the knowledge of what lay ahead in life for that young boy. For an entire year he never missed an entry. Some are short and to the point, others are long and rambling as he tells of one adventure or another. Each and every one of them is hilarious, and maybe, just one day, I'll share them with you. In a roller coaster ride of heartache, good fortune, despair, and torment, Tommy Costello rode his luck for more than 50 years, accepting life on no one's terms but his own.
It is said that the fates weave the tale of your life, and that dropped threads are always, without fail, reincorporated into the final pile. There can be no tangents to the ordained weave, no evading that which is meant to be. Having avoided his fate for so long, destiny finally overtook him that beautiful summer's afternoon. And, despite all of his ducking and diving, Tommy finally fell foul of the shotgun which should have ended his story some 30 years ago. I'll miss him, the little bollocks. Hi, it's Stephen Duffy here. I'd like to thank you all for joining me over the last 30 episodes to listen to the tale of Tommy Costello. I hope that you enjoyed listening to it as much as I did telling it. Despite the fact that Tommy is a fictional character, believe me when I tell you that I do in fact actually miss him. Writing his story was one of the most enjoyable projects I have ever undertaken as a writer. The book itself, Off Me Block, is available to buy from Amazon.com in both paperback and as a Kindle download. And it is my hope that the Young Tommy's Diary will be released in the spring of 2022. Once again, my heartfelt thanks to you for joining me each week, and please keep sharing this podcast with family and friends. I would love for as many people as possible to get a laugh out of Tommy's story. Keep well and stay safe.